Put like a table or something in front of the door.
I can't. There's no table, and I can't close the door because there's shit on the door.
A chair?
No.
Is there a chair?
No. Hank, what are you doing?
What kind of dog is Hank?
Hank is a puggle.
Oh, just punch him right in the face.
Why? He's trying to meet again.
A pug beagle?
He's named after Henrik Lundqvist.
All right. Are you guys ready to start? Are you all prepped? Yeah. Are you ready? Are you
ready
to get historical?
Hey, you're asking a lot of questions. I can't answer yes to all of them.
Are you ready to get hysterically historical?
I am ready to start.
All right, let's get going. Welcome to Talk Around Riyadh, the Wheel of Time showcast. I am your host, Joe Perry, here with my co-host from her beach house, Jen Iskra. How you doing tonight, Jen?
I'm doing good. I got everything set up. I'm not in a really hot recording booth, so I'm actually quite comfortable. Thanks for asking.
And how is Hank the dog doing over there?
Hank the dog is under the bed now. He hasn't moved. I'm not sure if he's supposed to be under there, but we're going to let it go for now. I think he's fine.
Jen, just let him finish. That's all I have to say.
What?
No.
God.
And how are you doing tonight, Tom?
Well, I'm mildly disturbed now, but I'm doing well. I'm not in a beach house or in a beach anything. But other than that, excited to do the show on a different night than we normally do when we do our live recordings. But that shouldn't, our early recording this week shouldn't change the high quality show that we normally produce.
Of course not. Of course not. We're all warmed up and we're ready to go. And before we get into our news and our main topic, I just wanted to announce that shortly before we started recording here, we hit our goal for the Gilbert Gottfried Reads the Dark One's Lines.
Yes.
So we hit our $150 GoFundMe goal that we started last
week. Unbelievable.
Yes, unbelievable. Thank you to all of the people who contributed. We're going to start working now and getting all the lines together to send to the man, Gilbert Gottfried, to record. And once we get that back, we're going to do something fun with it. And we'll be sure to share it with everyone and keep everyone up to date on the progress of it. So looking forward to that.
Very important stuff happening here.
Very important stuff here. This is important Wheel of Time. This is going to go down in the annals of Wheel of Time history.
I think Ari found the most disturbing GIF ever posted on our chat right now.
No, not by
more
a long
disturbing
shot.
Than the grapefruit.
I find this really, like, this is like David Lynchian to me. And I'm not going to tell you guys. You just, you know, look up highly disturbing Gilbert Gottfried GIF and see what you find.
Oh, no.
Okay. So let's get into our news and get off Gilbert Gottfried.
That's what she said.
So first up we have here, Yosha Shradowski posted on his Instagram story that he's in Prague. So he's one of the last people I think that we were waiting for, at least one of the last, you know, main people, Edmund Field 5 that we were waiting for to get to Prague. Excited, are we? Is everyone excited?
Yes.
Yep.
I could tell by everyone's reactions.
I'm
so then
so
I'll just move
excited.
On to the
things are really coming together in Las Vegas, Joe. I'm very excited. I'm just going to keep referencing that.
Yes.
it's cool. We talked about it a little bit on our last episode as other people were reporting in from the state where filming occurs. And he's obviously an essential piece to start the last couple episodes. So it's cool that everyone's back together.
Yeah, and we got a little surprise photograph. So a fan at Melissica3 posted on Twitter. She ran into Madeline Madden, Zoe Robbins, and Marcus Rutherford. Looks like they're outside at a bar or something or a restaurant, and she got to take a picture with them. So how awesome is that?
Very cool.
Extremely cool. I'm very excited for them because, like, I'm hoping, like, in a year or two, like, they won't be able to do that anymore. Not that I hope that they won't be able to go outside, but this is, like, their first taste of, like, somebody being, like, absolutely excited to meet them, and their show hasn't even come out yet. And I hope that, you know what I mean?
Are you qualified to say that, Tom? You don't know if people have ever come up to them taking pictures of them.
You know what? I'm fairly certain that no fan has come up to the three of them together out to lunch.
Oh.
and taking a picture of them. Yeah, I'm. Am I qualified? I don't know, but I feel that's a reasonable assumption to make.
Okay, all three. Three of them together.
Yeah,
but I'm sure they've got fans approach them and want to take pictures. Yeah, of course. I mean,
they have. Yes, I am sure of that as well. But that's not what I mean. Like, this is somebody who's like, oh, it's the three of them. Like, this person was a fan of like, knew that they were from the show and wanted to take a picture of them because of the show. And that's a kind of like, I don't know, that's kind of an exciting thing, I think, you know, in like a very, I don't know, fanish kind of way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in other social media news, Barney Harris has appeared to delete his entire Instagram, all of his Instagram posts, bizarrely. I don't know what to make of that. He hasn't been posting show related things, so it's not. I don't think anybody said, "Hey, you know, take these down because this is like you're giving away stuff." All of this stuff has nothing to do with Wheel of Time, so I'm not sure what he's doing.
You think he just decided he didn't want to do this anymore, and he backed out of it, deleted everything?
Well, it's so bizarre. He was like so quiet, and then all of a sudden created an Instagram account. Then was quiet on it for a little while. Then all of a sudden started posting a ton of stuff. And then deleted all of his posts.
Yeah. I just assumed that they were going to, like, tell him to calm down with the posting when he was back filming. But, yeah, I don't see why he would have to delete all the old stuff that he did if it didn't have anything to do with the show.
Tom, you've been wanting to say something. Go ahead.
It's just a theory. And it's, like, I don't know the man at all, obviously. But he was all in on social media for, like, a few weeks. Like, on Instagram, on Twitter, you know, like, responding to people, interacting, etc. And if like the show's like, hey, look, you gotta cool it because you can't accidentally let something slip. Like some fans are very astute. Even if you take like a picture, they'll know where you are, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, look, I could see him saying like, I don't want the temptation or the possibility of slipping up. Let me just get rid of this now. So I don't even have to like get notifications on people commenting on old stuff. And then I'm in there and then I'm doing stuff. He's like, no, I'll just shut it down. And then that's something that I do when, like, we're not filming. That's kind of how I read it. Just, you know what? I can't be tempted by it because then I might do something I'm not supposed to do. So let me just get rid of it.
No, he didn't delete his account. No. His account, though. He deleted a post that had nothing to do with the show.
Yeah. But, again, like, I feel like, well, he doesn't need to delete his account. I don't think anyone asked him to do that. And that's kind of, I don't know. He could have not delete. I didn't check this out. But did he delete them or did he... Or are they just not there anymore? Because maybe he just set it to like something where like, unless you're his friend, you can't see these posts.
I am crappy at Instagram, so I don't know. Jen, you have any insight into that?
I don't know. You can make a post private, maybe?
Yeah.
You might be able to do that. Could be that.
Yeah, so it could be something like that. Like, hey, let me just block this off from fan interaction while we're filming. And then I open it back up when we're not filming. And again, I think that's a... that could be a way to just kind of control his own social media use since he has to limit it while they're filming.
Well, he did post some stuff that could be considered a spoiler. He posted the Let Barney Blow. Wasn't there like a picture of him blowing a hole? Like it doesn't say what it is, but it's, you know, that's probably not something that Amazon would want him to post.
Oh, no. I think he reposted something that somebody else posted. I think it was The Spare of Time had posted that picture and he just reposted it.
No, I know, but like that's technically a spoiler for the show.
Well, not the show. It's a spoiler for the books.
Well, you know what I mean. I don't think that they want any, they're really being like very tight-lipped about everything.
Yeah.
So I don't think they would want anything kind of like that out there.
Yeah. All right. I don't know. I don't think Amazon has anything to do with it. I think Barney's a bit impulsive. And maybe he's like you were saying, where he is either he's like, oh, I'm concerned, I'm going to slip, so let me just do this. Or he's just like, he's all business now. He's like back in business mode where he's like, okay, I want to focus on, you know, acting and playing the role. And I don't want this to be distracting me. So, well, you know, I don't know why. Maybe he just doesn't want people responding to his posts, so it'll distract him. But I don't know. Maybe we can ask him one day.
That'd be nice.
Yeah, write that down. If we ever get a chance to interview him, that's a question we'll have to ask him. Somebody write that down.
All right. He is still active on Twitter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So who knows?
Yeah.
And I don't know if he's active, like he's like overactive on it, but he is still doing something on Twitter. Didn't he post something today?
Yeah, that's what Geeky always saying that in chat, that he's posted today. Yeah. Maybe he's got a thing against Instagram. I don't know. Maybe Instagram did something bad and now he's boycotting them or something.
Maybe he found out that they're related to Facebook.
Oh, maybe. Boycotting Zuckerberg. All right. So let's move on to the next piece. This is my favorite piece of news. Kikieri posted this, one of our favorite people, posted this on Twitter. It is from the Extra Films casting agency. We've spoken about them many times before. They're handling, I guess, the extras for Wheel of Time. It's a Czech casting agency. So all of these posts that we get are being like Google translated. So, you know, you have to bear with the translation. So I'm going to read this one. From Monday, July 7/9, we start filming the Project W again. We cannot write here what fantasy project it is, though we all know it's Wheel of Time. We will shoot for 65 more days and we will finish until mid-December. So I had said, I think I'd mentioned something about why July, but that someone was saying it's probably the translation because in Europe, yeah, they no, do the seven. day, month, they do day, month, year. So 7/9 means September 7th. And I don't know, it's probably just translation got screwed up. So right. What do you think
7th
about this?
Of September. They're gonna be... That's how they say
it. Yeah, exactly. So what do you think about this, that they're going to be, I mean, we knew they were going to be filming, starting to film soon. So it sounds like they're starting to film next week. 65 more days, mid-December.
That's not 65 days, right?
Is it not 65 days? Well, yeah, you're right.
65 days would be like mid-November, which is whatever.
You're right. So time works differently in Europe.
Oh, 65 filming days. Maybe that's
it. Yeah, there's no weekends, right? Weekends don't, they take their weekends off.
Yeah, okay. So I guess that's what they mean. Because originally we heard November, and I don't remember where that was from. But I thought we had heard November at one point.
Ugh, they're filming until December?
That's good. It's annoying to us because we were hoping to see something in Q1, right? But like...
That's not happening.
The more I hear like, okay, well, you know what? This is something that's going to be... We feel so epic, so involved, so such a production that we need to take, you know, 3 months to do it. I'm all in on that. Plus, there's a possibility, and I don't know this, but like, there's a possibility that like production, because of COVID restrictions or things of that nature, is necessarily slower. Like, you can't have as many people on set. Maybe you can't do these things the way that you used to do them because of certain production limitations. So there's that. And then the third option, and people raise up, but we were talking about this kind of like on our Discord server over the last week, is that they're booking time now for reshoots because they've been doing a lot of the editing of episodes 1 through 6 during the COVID pandemic. So they may have indicated during that time that there's time they need to do reshoots or pick up shots or whatever those whatever the case may be to kind of get extra footage or to clean things up from the original filming.
I mean, they could throw us a teaser trailer in Q1.
They could. Someone put a poll up on Twitter today, and my prediction is we're going to see something between Thanksgiving and Christmas.
You think?
So
it may not be. It may be like literally like no teaser. Footage, like a, right, like a teaser, right. Like just, you know, music and a voiceover like and a couple, logo.
Yeah,
maybe a couple of you might see a couple of scenes. Like, yeah, not a lot of scenes, but a couple of, you know, seconds of dialogue, yeah, or action. So Kikieri posted this in the Discord that she said a Block 4 was originally scheduled for about 11 weeks, which would put it to be finished towards the end of November.
Right. Right.
So maybe possibly she's saying that's possibly reshoots maybe, or maybe just because of the scheduling, because they had to rework the whole schedule, that they're going to have to drag it out because maybe other actors are, you know, committed to other things or other projects. I don't know.
It'd be
interesting.
It's also a different time of year. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, lighting issues could be different and stuff like that. You might have to work around some stuff like that, like outdoor shots.
Yeah, yeah. So I was surprised when I saw mid-December. I was expecting November. So just interesting thing. But, I mean, filming starting next week, so I can't wait to start getting little hints and, you know, travelers wandering on sets and things like that. So hopefully we'll get some of that. I can't wait for Narg and... Kikieri and Casper and Celtic Mist to find all this stuff for us.
Yes, thank you.
We're all counting on you. No pressure. And so the last bit I have, and I know you're going to love this one because hashtag horse news.
Yeah.
All right.
Casper, Lane Casper found this one. It's Marcus posted a video on his Instagram of him riding his horse. It's horse rider view cam, if you want to say, like first person view. So there's a couple other people.
Horse person view?
No, horse rider view.
Okay. Well, that's less fun.
I don't know.
horse.
But there's
person.
A couple other people there too. I couldn't make out if there was anybody else from the show, like, you know, any of the other actors there, but he was riding his horse. They were riding through a
Is that the
a
horse
field.
That falls into a river?
I don't know which horse
and drowns.
This is.
Yes, it's probably because I don't. Well, he gets another horse after they escape, so one way or the other.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he does.
Yeah, but that was pretty cool, too. So yeah. There's our, we haven't had horse news in a while, so Chen, I'm surprised you're not more excited about this.
I am excited about the horse news. You're right. I'm sorry. Hashtag horse news. I'm always excited.
Yes. All right. So any last bits of comments on the news there? Anything anybody want to say about that?
No. If I ever learn how to ride a horse, especially because someone's paying me to, I probably will be flexing with just videos of me on top of a horse as well. It's like, oh, by the way, this is what I'm doing today. So good on you, Marcus.
He's riding the horse and filming, like, and he's turning around. Like, he's got some pretty good horse skills, so just saying that.
He's got mad horse skills.
Yeah,
skills and there's a guy with a Z.
There's a guy up ahead with a ponytail. I'm assuming he's probably just one of, like, the horse trainers or whatnot.
Or is that Elias?
Oh, he does, like, a ponytail. He's kind of grayish hair.
Yeah, you know, or maybe he's just, you know, he's got it tied up because they're not working, you know?
Yeah. Interesting. Possibly.
Think about it.
All right. We'll speculate on that.
That's it.
Okay. Hashtag who is ponytail man. I like that. All right. So let's get into it.
Yes.
Are you ready to get historical, guys? You ready to get back into... This is a part six of our Wheel of Time history. This is part six, the final part.
This
we
is
finally
the final
made it there.
Part. Yeah.
We've gone from the first age all the way up till we're going to be ending at the beginning of the story. This is like 6 hours, over 6 hours, subtract all the news we talked about. But this is about 6 hours of Wheel of Time history. This is the greatest Wheel of Time history series ever. This rivals, I shouldn't say that. It's one of the greatest history series ever.
It rivals Ken Burns.
It rivals Ken Burns. Ken Burns is jealous of us. We sent him clips of our history and he was jealous.
It's okay, Ken. You don't need to be jealous.
He wept when he heard my recounting of the, I don't remember, one of the battles. Okay, so let's get right into it. So where we last left off, it was the end of the reign of Otto Hawkwing. He had died. And during his death, they were still in the middle of the siege of Tarvalen, or Tarvalon, if you will. We'll go back and forth
on
that.
I will.
Okay, so after Hawkwing's death... The lack of a living heir. Now, remember, his children were all dead, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some from his early marriage, I think, were assassinated or mysteriously died. And then the other two died going, one of them went to Shaanchen, the other one went to Shara, and they never were heard from again.
Right.
So because of the lack of a living heir, he left a void in the ruling of his empire. So what we have left is we have some nobles beginning to vie for control of the empire, while others began carving out some of the smaller kingdoms. So some of them were just trying to grab what they had and keep hold of that. And this led to a war which lasted over a century and would be later called the War of the Hundred Years. So even though Hawkwing was dead, that didn't end the siege of the White Tower. One of his generals, Soren Maravall, still had a large force of Hawkwing's military under his control and continued the siege. It was not until his lover, Ashara, who was the daughter of the provincial governor of Andor, convinced him to release the tower that the siege finally ended. She declared Andor a sovereign nation and became their first queen. It was believed that she convinced Sauron to lift the siege because she needed the support of the White Tower to maintain hold on Andor for the coming war. She even promised to send her first daughter to train at the White Tower and furthermore made it law that the eldest daughter of the ruler of Andor would train in the tower, and that the ruler would have an Aes Sedai advisor. This is where we get that tradition. They made it a law, actually. And it all stems from this whole treaty with the White Tower of her getting Suran to stop the siege against the White Tower.
Do you think they were lovers before this? Or did she, like, use him to get Tar Valon on Andor's side and get like an alliance together between those two nations?
That's a good question. I never thought about that. From the way I read it, it seemed like they were lovers already, but I don't know. That's a good question.
I didn't see anything like either way in the notes, so I wasn't sure either.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know. You know what? I'm going to say no, because at least when I've been reading all of this information and pulling together all these notes and everything, a lot of times they'll mention like scholars suspect this, and they'll always point out certain scholars suspect things.
Okay.
And they didn't mention anything about that. So I'm going to say that they were lovers prior to that.
Okay.
So 23 years into the war, Sauron was assassinated. All of his sons were dead as well from the war. So their daughter, Alicinde, became queen. And likewise, all of her sons died, leaving the throne to her daughter. So we have this kind of tradition going on here when the sons keep dying, so the daughter's taking over the throne. Because at this point, it wasn't only queens of Andor. There could be kings or queens. It just happened to be that they were queens because the sons kept dying.
So, you know, how it goes.
Yeah, how it goes. Well, there's a war. It's a war of 100 years, so the sons are dying during the war. It's not like they're mysteriously getting assassinated or dying, although Sauron was assassinated, but doesn't say anything about his sons. So during the war, nations rose and fell, but nations were not the only thing to grow from the chaos of the war. It was at this time that Lothair Mantalar formed the Children of the Light. You'll remember we discussed this in our White Cloaks episode back in episode 32, so I'm not going to touch any more on that, really. And here's a little tidbit for when we do our calendar episode. There are only fragments of records of the war, and all scholars seem to agree that it began in free year 944, but the end date varies from free year 1115 to 1119. In fact, the documentation of events during this war was so varied that a new calendar was created in free year 1135, which started year one of the new era.
Okay.
So there's a little calendar tease for all you.
This was still like 1,000 years ago. Okay. I was like, oh, it wasn't that long ago. If it was, and then I'm like, no, it was.
Yeah, so basically,
the end of the war of 100 years basically began the new era.
I do want to emphasize, as a tease to our riveting calendars and weights and measures episode that's coming. You know, we talked about this a couple of times, and I know that there's a portion of fandom who just doesn't understand it or can't or feel that it's unrealistic that in 3,000 years they didn't evolve past this point, or they didn't develop this level of technology, or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Things got so bad in the entire known world towards the end of this period of time that he just said, we don't even know what year it is anymore. We just have to start over. Like, you imagine how chaotic things are? Like, 2020 has been pretty bad year for most people, at least by us, and, you know, probably if you're listening, by you too. And, like, you know, there were jokes. In New York, the governor did, like, daily press conferences over the spring, and every Saturday press conference, he would start off with, like, a slideshow that just went, today is Saturday, because, like, you didn't know what day it was. But, like, can you imagine literally just going, oh, yeah, well, this is 2020. And someone's like, no, 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 it's 2022. And someone else is like, no, it's 2018. And like everyone, like nobody knows. That's how chaotic the world is at this point, that they can't agree on what year it is. So they just like, okay, forget it. Forget it. It's the first year. All right. Remember, it's year one. We're just going to start with a new calendar. All right. And it's that level of societal breakdown that happens again and again, that causes society to not be able to kind of get over that technological hump.
I guess ever since the taint was put on the Sidene, I don't think you're ever going to get back to that Age of Legends level of technology and advancement, because they mentioned so often that, you know, all of the greatest achievements with the One Power were done with both sides, both halves of the Source. So.
Yes.
I just like to add, too, that we're also getting requests to add currency to our calendar weights and measures episodes. So,
look, that's a lot of stuff, man. I don't know if we're going to be able to fit all this riveting content into one episode, but we'll see.
Oh, man, if Ben Stein were still alive, we could get him to do an episode.
If you want me to do that entire episode as if I were Ben Stein with absolutely no inflection in my voice. That's gonna put butts in seats.
I gotcha. All right. So 24 nations rose during the war, including the 14 that we currently see in the books. Malkier, unfortunately, was not one that survived, as we all know. Mm. He was overrun by Trollocs in the autumn of 955, the New Era. And by 957, New Era, the Blight had completely covered the land that had been known as the Kingdom of the Seven Towers. The other nine nations simply faded away, some absorbed by other nations and others abandoned completely. The only remnants of those lost nations larger than a village or town is Far-Matting. Did either of you know that?
No, I did not.
Yeah. I guess that's why it's not its own country. It's just a remnant of some of the other nations that existed before or during the War of the Hundred Years.
Yeah, it's a city-state, basically. It's just, like, there is no Far-Matting real estate that isn't in Far-Matting, right? I may have known that at one time.
So the war's over. Peace lasts for almost 1,000 years. So we've got almost 1,000 years of peace. There was relative peace, too. So most rulers focused on stabilizing their nations, and commerce took place of conquest. But in 509, the Aiel granted the nation of Kyrian the right to cross the Aiel Waste, a right formerly denied to all but tinkers and peddlers. This would allow Kyrian access to rare goods only obtainable in Shara. So they gave the Kyrian a sapling called Avendor Aldera, which was an offshoot of the fabled Avendisora, a descendant of the Chora trees.
Wait, I'm sorry, go ahead, Jen, you first.
They're giving the tree as a thank you to Kyrian? Mm-hmm. Why?
I'm going to tell you exactly why.
Okay. Seems like Kyrian should be giving them a thank you.
Oh, no. They're repaying a debt. They had much toe. Okay. But yes. I just wanted to give you credit because you pronounce those things like, boom, I know how to say these words. And I appreciate it.
I know Avendor Aldera. I can say it all day.
I appreciate it.
That's a poetic word. It just flows off the tongue. Avendor Aldera.
Yeah. I think I went to high school with that guy.
And Avendisora.
Avendor Aldera.
Yeah.
So to take advantage of the free passage, the Kyrianum would need to carry a banner of the trefoil leaf and no more weapons than what was needed for self-defense. So that was part of the agreement. What most people didn't know was the reason behind the Aiel's generosity, which you were alluding to before, Jen. Okay. During the breaking of the world, the ancestors of the Kyrianum provided the Aiel water. And the Aiel now wanted to repay that debt. So they had basically discovered that it was the Kyrianan ancestors were the ones who provided them water, and this was their way of repaying them.
And the reason that they still knew about it was that every clan chief finds this out.
That's correct.
Oh, that's okay. Right.
Yeah, they do. They find that out. So, I had no idea about this part. I had no idea that this was the reason they gave him Avendor Aldera. And
really?
I didn't know about the part that they granted him access to cross the waste.
Yes. That's why they're so pissed.
Yeah, that's why they become pissed.
Yeah.
They're the Aiel. A lot of things get them angry pretty easily, but still.
So around the same time, or somewhere relatively at the same time, the Children of the Light gain control of Amadisia and rule it as a puppet state through the kings and queens on the throne. To no surprise of us, this is kind of how it works in the present day. In 957, New Era, the Children set their eyes on expanding to Altara. But Mirandi and Ilion did not take kind of that, fearing that they would be next. So this resulted in what would be known as the White Cloak Wars, though the White Cloaks refer to it as the Troubles. I thought that was kind of funny. So one of the Lord Captains at the time was Pedred Nael, and he led the Children's forces against the King of Ilion, Matin Stepanios, who headed the opposition. So while Nael won most of the battles and even managed to capture Stepanios, the Children eventually overextended themselves. Stepanios was ransomed back to the Council of the Nine, and the Children were forced to sign a treaty reaffirming the pre-war borders between Amadisia and Altara. So these are the wars I think that Tam fought in when he was second captain in Ilion.
Okay.
We cover that a bit in our Tam episode.
Right.
So the following years were relatively quiet, though not perfect. Ilion and Tyr went to war in 970, which lasted almost 6 years. But in 965, Laemon Damodred became king of Kyrian. War between Kyrian and Andor continues. They're warring back and forth basically through most of this time on and off until about 968. The marriage of Laman's nephew Tarangel to the daughter heir of Andor, Tigraine, provided only a temporary respite. The marriage was reportedly not a happy one. In 972, Tigraine disappeared and Queen Modrellan died with no heir, triggering a struggle for succession which ended in Morgaes Trakand taking the throne. To prevent further dispute with Kyrian, she married Tarangel. That works out well, right? But she made it known to Tarangel that he was not and never would be co-ruler of Andor, because Tarangel had plans and high hopes, but she kind of shut that down for him. Right. It was known in Kyrian that Laman sought his nephew to become sole ruler in Andor, and his failure was taken as a sign of weakness. This is all Dice Dymar crap, everybody. Plots were born to unseat Laman, and he hatched his own schemes to counter them. One small part of those schemes was Laman's decision to cut down Avendor Aldera to make a throne of the like that could not be matched. Little did he know that this would begin an avalanche of events that would be the beginning of the end of an age.
Ba-ba-ba-bum!
In 976, a force of about 100,000 Aiel descended upon Kyrian to punish the tree killer Laman for cutting down Avendor Aldera.
I have a question.
The reason...
Sorry.
Go ahead, Jen.
How did they know he cut it down?
I think it was pretty much widely known. He didn't like keep it a secret. He was making a throne that of the likes that no one could match.
But I thought they never left the waste.
No, but peddlers.
People travel through the waste. Yeah.
All right.
Peddlers, tinkers, and at this point, Kyrianen were able to travel freely through the waste.
Okay.
So news reached them. They heard about it. They heard things.
All right.
And then they have their dreamwalkers, so they can spread the word really quickly. So I imagine once it was known, they probably mobilized pretty quickly. Because in 976, a force of about 100,000 Aiel descended upon Kyrian to punish the tree killer Laman for cutting down Avendor Aldera. The reason at the time was not known by the Westland nations. To them, it seemed like the Aiel were just there to pillage and loot, though the Aiel never took more than the 1/5 in accordance with their custom. It was also not known that this only represented 4 of the 12 Aiel clans, which was led by the Tar-Dad chief, Janduin. So here everybody's thinking that basically all of the Aiel have come over the wall, but it was only a third of their forces.
Awesome.
Yeah. So the Aiel swept through Kyrian, torching the entire city, sparing only the library. Oh, this is only months after crossing the Dragon Wall, so they moved swift and destroyed Kyrian.
I know they're not really similar, but right now I'm thinking of... Oh my god, I can't think of it. From Game of Thrones. Khal Drogos. What are those people called?
The Dothraki?
Thank you. I'm thinking they're just like a foreign, like a force of that just comes over and like destroys everybody. And they're just different from, they live differently, you know, like in the desert and all that. It's just a similar idea.
Yeah, except the Aiel did not like horses and didn't ride horses.
Okay,
so.
Well, yeah. The opposite in the horse realm, but everything else.
But they moved just about as fast as horses, so... Like horse people. So, yeah. And Janduin was leading the whole thing. He was the chief in charge, I guess, of the whole campaign. Who we learn later find out, spoiler alert, is Rand's father. So the war quickly spread down to Tyr and across to Andor, and after 3 years to Tar Valon itself. Soon, almost every nation had sent soldiers against the Aiel. The Battle of Tar Valon, also called the Battle of the Shining Walls, the Battle of the Nations, the Battle of the Red Snows, and the Battle of the Blood Snow. Didn't realize it had so many names, began on 978 when the Aiel were encountered by a loose coalition generally called the Grand Coalition or the Grand Alliance. This consisted of Shinar, Andor, Ilion, Tyr, Arafel, Kyrian, Gelden, Amadisia, Mirandi, and Altara, with Tar Valon and the Children of the Light also contributing soldiers.
Wow.
Agomar Jagad of Shinar was the obvious choice to lead the force, but Laman insisted it was his right to command. So other nations began putting forth their leaders as candidates, and it was eventually decided that each nation would appoint one representative to a council of decision-making. Command of the armies was rotated, putting great captains Agomar and Pedro Nile at the top of the rotation. So I believe there was a few at the bottom of the rotation that never even saw command because it just never got to them. But it's good that they put Agomar and Nile because they were the two best captains at the time. The Alliance raised a force of approximately 170,000 men, a size not seen since the time of Otter Hawkwing. So at this point, too, it's good to note, like, so they say around 100,000 Aiel came across the Dragon Wall. I believe it was a little less than that. But by this point, you know, this is 3 years later when they're at Tar Valon and this battle's about to take place. They're down to about 70 to 80,000. So this is, the Alliance has double the amount of troops that the Aiel have.
Right.
Jen, I'm going to call upon you. There was such a great description in the Big White Book of the battle that I didn't want to chop it up to pieces. So we directly are quoting this. And Jen, if you have it right in front of you, would you please read us the Battle of the Shining Wall, aka the Battle of the Blood Snow?
I will. And then I have a question when I'm done.
Okay, go ahead.
Here we go. The day before Danshu, the 27th day of Nisan, was the first of 3 days of heavy fighting on both sides of the Erenin to stop the Aiel overrunning Tarvalon. Some fighting occurred around the bridges across the Alindrel Erenin, and there was fierce skirmishing on the first 2 nights. The first snows had long since fallen, and both sides were hampered not only by thick snow on the ground, but by several brief snowstorms through the first 2 days of fighting. The Aiel had never seen or dealt with snow before crossing the Dragon Wall, yet this was in no way evident in the ferocity of their fighting. Their flanking attacks and intermittent pricking strikes kept the Alliance on the defensive. The snowstorms were heavy on the morning of the second day, but by the late afternoon of that day, the weather cleared, and the rest of the battle took place in deep snow but under bright, clear skies. Late on the third day, the Aiel finally carried out their purpose of killing Laman of Kyrian.
Go Aiel.
Now, my question is, why is Laman in Tarvalon?
So, yeah, he does. He flees the city.
Okay.
And he's putting himself... Power. Oh, his power went. That's good.
No. All right, we'll handle it. We got this.
Yeah. So we talk for a little bit. So anyway, his insistence on being one of the leaders of the troops is what causes the war to continue. Because from the Aiel point of view, it is not a war. Like, they're all here to just kill one guy. And the fact that he keeps going behind tens of thousands of troops is what's causing them to keep fighting. So, to me, it's a really interesting thing because it's the Aiel War. And for everyone in the Westlands, everyone, you know, in the mainlands of the Wheel of Time world, it's this huge event. And for the Aiel, it was like, well, it was a raid. You know, like, they don't even think of it as something that was a big deal. I don't think he goes to Tarvalon. I think he goes with, like, the Alliance of troops that have come to protect him, like, with his armies. And so, like, the fighting is just the Aiel trying to kill him, and they're maneuvering against him. And that lasts for a long period of time. I also wanted to point out, while Joe's not here, something that Joe mentioned that is just awful in regards to, like, leading a battle. And I think as great fighters as Aiel are, when you have a huge army of over 100,000 men and you go, well, this week I'm going to be in charge and then you're going to be in charge and then Joe will be in charge. That's not a way that army is going to succeed, right? Even when you do have people that are great captains that are truly, you know, great strategic thinkers and generals and leaders or whatever, having different leadership of an army that size leads to conflicting orders, leads to not having cohesiveness, and I think leads to them not being as successful as they could have been.
Well, maybe it's like the Wheel of Time having different directors, though, that they all have a different vision. So each battle is slightly different, but still good, hopefully.
Hopefully still good. I think that the importance, though, is that, like, the directors are, whatever, we want to get into this euphemism now, right? The directors are like, they're not the general. Rafe is the general, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Rafe is the guy, he's the showrunner. He's the guy making all the decisions. He's the one uniting force, right? The successful multi-film franchises, your Star Wars films, your Marvel Cinematic Universe, right? They have one voice, one person that who's saying, like, this is what the story should look like. This is what the tone should be. This is what the overarching storyline should be. Like, George Lucas was that. Kevin Feige is that. DC's films are, maybe individually they're good, but overall they're, like, disappointing. They're lacking something because there isn't that leadership. The more recent Star Wars films, again, some of them may be good, some of them may be not, but there's no consistent voice through all of those. And that's led to a lot of problems, especially with the third trilogy. And I think that rotation of leaders, of the coalition forces, of this week it being one person, next week it being the other, that leads to a lack of consistency in those troops. Like, whether the strategy is good or the strategy isn't good. It's like when you play that game where I'm going to tell a story and I'm going to say the first sentence, and then I give it to Jen. She's going to say the second sentence and the third. And like, you can try and make that story as good as you want. You can't control where that story is going because I'm going to just take it in my own direction. And like, that's what's happening with these troops. So it's just an awful, awful idea. And it's just another thing that I guess Lehman or Lehman or however you want to pronounce his name, Lame. And it's just another sign of his poor, poor leadership skills.
He's literally the worst.
Yes. Yes. He is the worst, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, the Dama Dreads are just pretty much all awful. I think the only ones worth anything were Moraine's dad and I guess Moraine herself. But otherwise, they're all pretty bad.
Yeah, there's two. Moraine and her cousin seem to be pretty good. She, in fact, seems better than Moraine. I mean, Moraine's great, but Moraine's a Dama Dread, like, in regards to her politicking. Caroline seems pretty straightforward about things. So, yeah, he's the worst, though. It's difficult to make as many poor decisions as he does over these 3 or 4 years.
So, by this point, the Aiel have accomplished their goal, right? The Westlands think that they've come over to pillage and loot the entire Westlands, but they really just come for one thing. They've come to kill Laman. So as soon as they're done with that, they're heading back east. So they begin moving eastward, and the Alliance misunderstands this for a retreat and begins to pursue, engaging the rear guard over the next 20 days until the Aiel reach Kinslayer's Dagger.
Maybe they should have sent less people and just assassinated him.
Well, yeah, they weren't doing an assassination. They were doing, like, we're going to go in and we're going to kill him. And since he's a king, he probably has an army. So we're just going to all go and kill him.
So, having lost its king, House Dama Dread lost the throne of Kyrian to House Riatan. Tarangale's dream of having children on both the throne of Andor and Kyrian was dashed. And some believe that this embittered him so much that he made plans to seize the throne of Andor, but was mysteriously assassinated in 984. I wonder who could have done that. Was it, Tom, maybe? Spoiler alert.
Not me.
What? Tom never assassinated anyone in his whole life.
It was me.
And then, in 997, a man in Gelden by the name of Loghain Eblar proclaimed himself the Dragon Reborn. He was eventually captured by the White Tower. And I'm not going to go into too much detail. You can check out our Loghain episode for a little bit more information about that. But in 998, Trollocs, not seen outside of the Borderlands since the Trolloc Wars, suddenly appeared in Emmons Field, a small farming village in Andor, once in the nation of Manetherin. In the words of one commentator, all that came before was dust sliding down the mountainside. The avalanche was about to descend.
I wonder what happens next.
And thus ends our history of the Wheel of Time.
We did it, everybody.
And we can close the book on that.
Woo!
The pattern tried to stop us from finishing, but we've succeeded.
It's true. We pushed through. So I have one thing that I want to do. We talked about this, I think, after one of the six parts. That's it. But normally when we do these deep dives, we end these deep dives with, and how will this be on the show? And I want to make sure that we do that now that we're done with all of this stuff. We went through, like you said, many hours of the prehistory of the books, right? All these different wars from the Age of Legends through to, you know, the Aiel War that's you know, just a 20 years before the series proper. How much of this makes it into the show? Like, whether, I'm not saying like you're going to see scenes, like I don't think that Ishara is going to be a cast actress that has lines or anything, but how much of it makes it into the show proper, where these are things that are discussed that people understand from dialogue, versus how much of this is cut? Or do you think this is stuff that kind of gets put in like these, I don't know what the proper term for it is, but a lot of these shows now do things where like there's alternate media where there's like online clips or there's, you know, websites or things where you can dive into this information. So what do you guys think about this stuff and how much of it's going to make it to the show?
I think we'll definitely see the Aiel War, or we have discussed about, obviously, about Rand being found on the mountain. I think we'll see a little of that. And then eventually, I think we'll find out about, like, how the Aiel War started and why they were there in the beginning. You know, what in the first place, why they came when we get to the Aiel. And as far as the rest of the stuff, I don't know about, like, the Hundred Years' War. I don't know if we're going to be getting any of that.
It's not the Hundred Years' War, Jen.
The War of the Hundred Years. Sorry. Do you know what I mean?
Do you think RJ got that from the actual historical Hundred Years' War?
Possibly.
Yes, I think he possibly did, right?
So, to answer your question, Tom...
Thank you.
Why are you saying thank you? Like, I didn't answer your question.
No, I'm not saying it like that.
You're like, thank you for answering my question when Jen didn't.
I'm sorry. Joe said it like that. Joe said it like, to answer your question, because Jen didn't.
Sorry.
Yeah, Jen, sorry. That was my fault. I didn't mean to answer it that way, but I couldn't think of a better phrase to use there. But anyway, in my opinion, I believe they will be there's going to be flashbacks. I mean, we have the whole Karin Nagashi casting, and originally we had thought that we were definitely going to be getting New Spring flashbacks because of that. I'm starting to lean towards that's not what Karin Nagashi is going to be doing, that she, her and Pete Franzen are most likely going to be part of the battle of to capture Loghain, and that they're going to die.
That's all right.
And that is going to be their role, not necessarily flashbacks. Now, we do have castings of young Swan, but she's a little young to be New Spring Swan, so I'm not really sure about that. What I'm starting to think now is that we might get some Aiel War flashbacks during the during Tan's fever dream scene, right? So when Tan's having all those flashbacks, or he's mumbling to Rand about not being his father, we might actually get flashbacks of the Aiel War, maybe of him finding Rand, or maybe some more vague flashbacks during that time. I think that'd be a perfect time to have it. And Rafe did say that we are getting an Aiel in season one, but not the Aiel that we expect. So this could be what he's talking about here. So I've just talked myself into it. So I'm pretty sure that's what we're going to see at least. And that'll be in the first episode, because that's probably where they're going to be putting that, if it's going to be in the fever dream sequence. Yeah. Yeah. So that's my thoughts on that.
My parents' dog agrees with you.
So I feel like a huge burden has been lifted off of us now that we've finally been able to complete this Wheel of Time series. It was kind of always, since we started it, it kind of was hanging over our head, and now it's finally done. Oh my God. So much. So many notes.
Yes, now we can move on.
All I'll say is this, to that point, right? You know, we just recently did our anniversary episode, where there's a, you know, and this has really truly been 1 year, give or take, since we recorded, right? So last week was our 52nd episode, so 53rd, right? So, and like, we had some concern, like, hey, you know, the show's not going to be out for a while. Are we going to run out of stuff to talk about? We're like, oh, well, we'll do a couple episodes on like what happens before the books. And it was 6 episodes. Like, we are not going to run out of stuff to talk about. So, like, we were joking before in the chat, right, in the show, about, like, how, you know, we've been saying for a while, like, and I think I actually really want to do, like, the calendar episode, the weights and measurements. But if we start talking about coinage, that's a different episode. I might do just, like, you know, not a full episode about coins, but, like, there's so much world-building things in these books that we could get into. Like, some of that might be dry for some people, but some people really love it. So, who knows? But there are things. You can talk about the economies of the different lands, like what they do, like how they produce, how they make coin, what they, like, you know, like they get into that a lot in Andor, but like, you know, that, you know, Saldia has ice peppers and whatever else. Like, there's a lot to it. So I appreciate the fact that we didn't take a surface level look at these things, that we really went in depth, because all of this stuff is like great stuff to mine for story. And even though I agree with you guys, I don't think a ton of it is going to make the series proper, I do think that as the series progresses, these are things that you uncover, like layers of an onion, right? I don't think you do it the same way that you do in the books, where Brand kind of doesn't know anything and finds out a piece and finds out a piece and finds out a piece. Because I don't know, like, exactly how that would play out in, you know, season after season. But I do think the show may have a crumb, like a breadcrumb. And then, like, they'll give you something else, like whether it be extra footage online or, like, a different, like, you know, whatever it is, but they'll give you something to be like, look at this, find this trail and find out how that plays into the show. And I think that that's really interesting. So, like, the main story is so rich, but all of this background stuff is so cool and well thought out and well built and influences the things that happen in the series in small or big ways. And I appreciate the fact that we did it the way we did it.
So, listening to you say that now, Tom, it makes me kind of look back and think that we... you know, if we had to do this again, the histories, you know, episodes, I might have suggested that we don't put any spoilers in there. Just because of that, this would make a great compliment piece. So when the show comes out, people who are get really into the show and want to know more about the world, but without, you know, peeking ahead, this would have been great for them to listen to, you know, 6 parts of history of prior Wheel of Time stuff, but without any spoilers, without any ruining any of the, you know, the later seasons of the show. So I guess that's the one thing, you know, I'm glad I thought of that now instead of when we started this.
You can't put the genie back in the bottle.
Yeah, we can't put the genie back in the bottle. All right, so let's start wrapping this up now. I got a few announcements before we close it out. So Nablus, the Wheel of Time YouTuber, has finally launched thegreatblight.com. Yeah, that's been in the works for a while now. Him and a bunch of other people have been working on this. It is a one-stop Wheel of Time community website. It's got basically everything you could possibly need for the Wheel of Time on it. So there's a wiki, there's map resources, there's merchandise, there's a whole content creator section where you can look at different YouTubers, podcasters, artists, anything you could possibly need for the Wheel of Time all in one place. So I know the wiki articles and all of that have not been filled out yet totally. You know, there's some few articles there, but they're working on adding more. This is the beta version of the site. We were lucky enough to be asked to be one of the featured podcasters. So if you go to the podcast page, you'll see us right at the top with a few other podcasters. You can actually go there and watch or listen to podcasts and videos directly on the sites. You can see all your favorite podcasters, YouTube's content creators there. It's links to all their Instagrams, Facebooks, any social media accounts they have. They have merchandise sites, Patreons, all of that information. So I encourage you to check that out. We're going to be putting a link to it in our show notes, so you can go down there and check that out. Also, follow us on social media. Join us in Discord if you like to talk about Wheel of Time. We continue our conversations over there, so I encourage you to join there. We have a great community. You can rate and review us wherever you listen to your podcasts. You know, that's a great way to support us, and we always appreciate that. We have merchandise. We also have Patreon. All of that information is, again, in our show notes. Also, SpoilerCon registration has opened for everyone who's interested, who couldn't go to SpoilerCon, let's say, because it was too far for you. They're doing it online this year. We're going to be participating in some of the panels, also in the Content Creator Showdown, so you can catch us there. Go to spoilercon.org and sign up, register right now so you can get access to the Discord so you can participate and listen to all the panels and great stuff that they're going to have. That's the weekend of October 2nd and October 3rd. Let's see. Is there anything else that I'm forgetting? Guys, am I missing anything?
We got another mention in the article about the Dusty Wheel on winterscoming.net. Yeah. That was cool.
Yes, yes. So the Dusty Wheel, for those of you who don't know, edited Winter Dragon into a watchable actual pilot.
Yes.
I suggest you go check that out. It's pretty awesome.
I recommend Golden listen Trap. To our episode about how bad that is, then go watch Dusty Wheel's very good cut of it.
Yeah, winterscoming.net wrote an article about it, and then we were just mentioned as some of the other content creators in Wheel of Time. Yeah, so... Oh, and one last bit. So if you have been following Barney Harris's Twitter or Instagram, you know of his SoundCloud account with all the music that he's been creating. It's been pretty interesting. If you go, I would suggest go check it out. I believe he has a link to it on his Twitter. Some of the songs are actually really good. So what we decided to do is we reached out to Barney and asked him if we could put one of his songs in our podcast. And he was so kind enough and gracious enough to give us the okay to do that. So... at the end of this episode, instead of hearing our normal outro music, you're going to hear a song by Barney Harris called Facts and Feelings of Happiness. I really do enjoy this one. So I guess right now it's time to say thanks for listening, and you'll hear us next time.